It's Hometown Alaska. I'm Charles Wolforth. Did you know that Anchorage has the most ethnically diverse neighborhood in the United States of America? That's right. By the statistics and the census, way the census numbers are counted up, the Mountain View neighborhood and the area around it is more diverse than any other neighborhood in the United States. And we have the top three most diverse high schools in East, Bartlett, and West high schools. Well, how did this happen? It's happened rather quickly. Anchorage didn't used to be this diverse, used to be pretty much lily white. And it's caused a lot of changes in our city, and it's made it a more interesting place to live, I think, and certainly a lot better food than we used to have. So that's our topic today, Anchorage's diversity, and why is Anchorage so diverse, and all of the things surrounding that diversity. And unusual today, we had some guests who canceled, and fortunately we've got an excellent panel to talk with you today. Eddie Hunsinger is a demographer with the Alaska Department of Labor. Thanks for being with us, Eddie.
Yes, thanks for having me.
And Indra Arriaga is a Mexican-American artist. She's a board member of the Alaska Institute for Justice, and she's a planner and consultant. And Indra was kind enough to come in at the last minute when we had these cancellations, and she's the perfect guest to be with us, so should have asked you in the first place. Thanks for being with us, Indra.
Thank you for having me.
So you were born in Mexico.
I was. I was born in Jalapa, Veracruz, which is on the Gulf Coast. My parents came to the States before I did. I came at the age of 8. And so my parents were the original immigrants in our family. I came second. They didn't speak English. I do. And so I've had the benefits and the opportunities of, you know, what it means to take place in this great country.
Mm-hmm. And you still have some pretty strong connections with your hometown.
Of course, yeah. Most of my family's still there. I'm mm-hmm. the only one who's made it this far out, far north.
And which I mean, your parents had a restaurant in Texas, right, in San Antonio?
Correct.
But then your grandparents are in Mexico. Which one is home for you, or do you have multiple homes?
Well, my heart, I think, is still pretty much Mexican, and all my family's there. But where I have made my own home and my own family is now here. Mm-hmm. So it's an interesting dilemma, because once you come here, you also have the opportunity to create a family that you wouldn't normally create, you know.
I think everybody moving to Alaska has a little bit of that.
Yeah.
I mean, I grew up here, but I know that that you come here and the extended family isn't here, and so you develop a network of friends, and you sort of turn that into your mm-hmm. De facto family.
Yeah.
Has that been easy or difficult?
It's been pretty easy. I mean, especially in Anchorage, people are really open, and they give you opportunities, and you just connect.
Mm-hmm.
It's been really, really nice.
And you're a visual artist. And
I am.
That's another. I guess you've got multiple circles, right?
I do, and they tend to overlap in some cases, and often, you know, not at all. You know, but that kind of speaks to I think the dynamics in Anchorage. You know, with all different groups pursuing different interests. And, you know, just coalescing where there's overlap.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Mm-hmm. So turning to you, Eddie, in terms of the demographics, I think it surprises people to hear that we're more diverse than some big cities outside, or that we have neighborhoods that are so diverse. Is that sort of a statistical trick, or really are very diverse?
Well, we are very diverse in particular communities. So the broader municipality of Anchorage is still not as doesn't have as large a share of non-white population as communities like big cities like Seattle and Los Angeles. But certain communities within Anchorage, including Mountain View, Fairview, some of the areas
Spinard, Muldoon.
Spinard, right, north of the university. Do have a very diverse, remarkably diverse populations.
Well, and part of that is because when we talk about diversity, we're not just talking about minority. We're also talking about that there's white communities that are still intermixed, and we don't really have ghettos in Anchorage where it's a one ethnic group, right?
Right. There definitely the communities are, including Mountain View, for instance, is one that comes to the top of my mind. Have many groups living within that area. And We have a large Pacific Islander Samoan population in Anchorage and in some of those communities, and that adds another group to the mix, which when they calculate diversity, that adds things to the numbers for sure.
Yeah, and Alaska Natives who wouldn't be found probably in most urban areas outside.
Definitely.
So that gives you more groups, and that creates more diversity when you've got more groups, and each of those groups is of significant size, and so that's how we get these statistical...
Precisely, yeah. Right.
But it's also, it's truly a more diverse city than the average nationally, and that certainly didn't used to be the case. What kind of change have we seen percentage-wise in terms of the number of minorities in Anchorage from what it was in the past?
Well, right now we're at about, I can say the Asian population, for instance, in Anchorage, I believe is at about 10%. It's a little tricky because if you include people of multiple heritages, then that adds to the numbers. And then we have about 3% is Pacific Islander, including Samoan, 6% is Hispanic origin, over 10% Alaska Native, and of those groups, three of them I mentioned, Asian, Pacific Islander, and Hispanic origin, are increasing significantly each decade. Their numbers are growing each decade, in large part because of the many, many people who move to the state each year. A bigger share of those folks who are moving here are of those groups than are currently here. And so through migration, we're adding to our diversity each year. And the folks who are moving out are generally a little bit more white. The racial distribution of the people who move out of the state is generally a little bit more white. It's not a big difference, but each year it adds, and that adds to our diversity in Anchorage.
So something like 10% of the community is turning over every year, coming in or leaving.
That's right, about 10%. So
it seems like a lot. Is that normal?
It is a lot more than people generally think. It definitely surprises people when they hear that 10% of the people in Anchorage weren't here last year, moved here last year, not just weren't here, but moved here last year. And 10% of the people who are in Anchorage now, and that's a rough number, it fluctuates, will be gone next year. They'll have moved out of the state. And that's about 30,000 people. Maybe more like 8 to 10%. So, mm-hmm. But still, a lot of people, and a lot of the folks who are moving here are of diverse heritages.
Hmm. So as you turn up the mix on that the group that's coming in, just by a little bit. If it's 10% every year, then that's going to add up after a few years.
Definitely. We have a big turnover in Alaska, even at the state level. Even when we don't, when we only look at people moving to and from the state, 40,000 people move to Alaska each year, and 40,000 people move out. And there's, even though we don't see maybe big changes in our population totals, we see a big change every year in the composition of our population, and we change all the time.
Yeah. It's Hometown Alaska. Our topic today is a diversity of Anchorage, and there's a bunch of things to talk about on this topic, including, why are people coming here of different ethnicities? I mean, it was not the first thing you'd expect, and I think a lot of people outside are behind the times and don't know how diverse Anchorage is. Why did you come here if you weren't born in Anchorage? What brought you to Anchorage, regardless of whether you're white, black, Hispanic, Pacific Islander, Asian, Native, or whatever, and or if you've always been here, how do you feel about the changes that have taken place? Obviously, all change is uncomfortable in some way. So we're having an open discussion on Hometown Alaska today, and to get on the air, dial 550-8433. That's 550-8433. If you're outside Anchorage, it's toll free. The number is 1-888-353-5752. Or you can email us at hometown@alaskapublic.org. And I have an email here from a member of the Samoan community. Points out Anchorage has minority communities, not just minorities. The Samoan community, for example, grew around one family who first emigrated here. And I think that's interesting as we think about why we have why we have large numbers of seemingly small, what we would think as being obscure groups. Obviously, there's a lot of Latin Americans in the world, but, you know, there are a lot of Asians in the world, but we particularly have a lot of Filipinos in Anchorage. We particularly have a lot of Koreans, and we have Samoans, and so a community is established, and then sort of people coalesce around it. Is there a strong Hispanic community or Latino community here, Indra?
Yes, and it's been growing. And I think that, you know, what the email says is very true. It starts with family. And, you know, we have very strong family ties. So I have friends who came here, found opportunity. So then their brothers and sisters came here to share the opportunity and help one another. So, you know, it's a community mm-hmm. development. It's a community movement.
Right. So, and then once the community is there, it builds a bridge or makes it much easier for the next group to come along.
Right. And then it also helps anchor the children that are born here, you know, within the culture. Because without, you know, people that share your culture and your values and traditions, then those can very easily be lost.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, so. And Eddie, you were saying that one reason that the Hispanic community is growing fast is not necessarily because of that many people coming, but because of high birth rates.
That's right. Yeah. The Hispanic population does have higher birth rates than the state as a whole, and that has definitely added to growth. There was an interesting fact. We looked at the proportion of Alaskans who were born in Alaska, and it was remarkable that if we look at the non-white or non-Hispanic white population, about 29% were born in Alaska. If we look at the Hispanic population, 31% were born in Alaska. And the reason for that is that a lot of those Hispanic Alaskans are younger. They're born in the last 10 or 20 years. And so that definitely adds to the proportion who were born in the state.
Hmm. So how does the Hispanic community relate? I mean, is there different communities in town? They have churches, they have sort of different community. We have a lot of communities within a community here. Are there places where Latinos meet in Anchorage?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, the church is definitely a big pull, not for me personally, mm-hmm. but it is a place where if I have something, you know, that I want to communicate to the community, it's one of the places that I'll go, mm-hmm. you know, to give out information. There are also cultural events. You know, the Mexican Consulate puts on the September 16th event. They get about 700 people. You know, the Day of the Dead event pulls about 400 people. And then just within the community, there are small groups of people who are active and visible. And I think that that helps, you know, reaffirm, you know, traditions and ties and, you know, just the fact that, hey, we're here and, you know, we want to share everything that we do and things that we bring, including, you know, as you mentioned, food and music and art and everything else.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I know you have an art studio and you have kids coming in doing a musical group there. Tell about that.
Yeah. Well, you know, I was looking for performers for the Day of the Dead event 1 year, which happens November 2nd, and this group sort of popped up in my radar of kids, two Latino brothers or Mexican American brothers who have never actually really been to Mexico, but their parents are Mexican, and in their quest to really find, you know, their identity and connect, they were both musicians, so they started playing mariachi music, and then got their friends who are not all Mexican. You know, the group is made up of a diverse group of kids who play trumpets and guitars and everything else. And so they form a mariachi group, and they come in on the weekends, and that's where they practice. And so the group itself is very, very reflective of Anchorage. It's got everybody in it and everybody, you know, participating in this, which is not necessarily their culture, but they enjoy and they learn and they work together.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So you have people who have no Latino heritage at all.
Right.
As part of it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Right. And it makes it a lot of fun. And it's very, so they're called Agave Azul, you know, which is the blue agave. But it's very nice for me to, you know, eavesdrop on their practices, because while they play mariachi music, you know, in performance, when they practice, they practice the whole gamut. I mean, they'll do jazz, they'll do classical, they'll do scales, they'll explore other music too, which is really, really important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know what I find really interesting about, one of the things I find really interesting about it is when you bring up kids who were born here and are looking for an identity, and they're looking for it in terms of their ethnicity of their parents and grandparents coming from Latin America, Mexico, And in one sense, it seems like everyone in Anchorage is sort of they can be from Anchorage, but there isn't really an Anchorage identity. There's a, you know, there's your ethnicity that you come from or where your people are from. You know, if you're, I suppose that the people from Eklutna are maybe they have a mm-hmm. sort of like they mm-hmm. you know the Dena'ina are originally from here, but nobody else is. And when I think back, how did we feel about that when I was a kid? I think there was kind of a pioneer identity. I mean, they're sort mm-hmm. of like, well, we're tough pioneers, which is very much a sort of a white image. But I don't even feel like that's really. It seems kind of anachronistic now. I don't sort of see too much of that going on anymore. And now I see more people are identifying with groups within the city, which mm-hmm. just sounds like what you're talking about, Indra. It's like this identity within. You still feel like you're from Anchorage, but you also feel like you're this, and you also feel like you fit in this circle and that circle.
Yeah, no, I would definitely agree with that, you know, and when I think about that, I think of, you know, some of my friends who are artists, who are Alaskan Native. They're not just Alaskan Native, but this is part of their identity, and they share that. And so it's a way of, you know, reaffirming your own culture, especially when, you know, you see your culture really struggle. You know, you tend to try and, you know, lift it up a little bit and mm-hmm. make sure it's strong and, you know, identify with it and make sure it's respected. And that's across the board, regardless of identity. You know, I think it's a very strong value, which is very, very Alaskan, too.
Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. you could be an individual, but you mm-hmm. you have something to bring to the party, which is, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're nodding, Eddie. I know you haven't lived in Anchorage all that long.
Not that long. So I moved to Anchorage about a year ago, and I first moved to Alaska.
You're one of that 10%.
Right, exactly. I'm one of them. And I moved to Alaska in 2006. But I was going to say, I was really glad to hear the email earlier sort of talked about this as well, that they have this memory of this Samoans in Alaska event, this family coming to Alaska. Mm-hmm. And I'm so glad to hear it because it's hard to pin down. People ask, why do folks move here? And when people maybe move here because family was here or fellow language speakers were here, it's hard to have that in data. So it's good that the community is knowing, the community knows the history, and that we have some knowledge of that. I think it's very valuable.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've just finished, and I met Indra because I'm writing this book for the Centennial of Anchorage for the Humanities Forum. Doing a chapter on diversity, and since I'm from here, sort of started asking a lot of people, well, why did you come? You know, why do we have Hmong people here from Laos, and why do we have Filipinos? And over again, I just heard, well, it's a great place to live. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm here because I love the beauty of it, and not much traffic, and not much crime, and lots of opportunity, and just the fact that it's a good place to live. Some sort of the most ambitious people in American society are recent immigrants or second generation, and so they end up here. Did mm-hmm. you feel like that's true, Indra?
Yeah, you know, I didn't really have an idea about Alaska before I came here. So coming here, it was a little bit surprising. And coming here, you know, a little bit over 10 years ago, there's been this huge shift in the people around me and the places and, you know, the different accessibility to different groups. So that was a really nice surprise. What was even more important for me was that you as an immigrant or you as a newcomer, no matter where you're coming from, you actually have an opportunity to do something. Mm. You know, I moved here from San Francisco, and being, you know, a Latina woman, gay in San Francisco is like, you
nothing
know,
special.
It's yeah. nothing special. and you come here, and it's not that it's necessarily that special or that it's at times that welcomed. There is an opportunity to create, you know, your own version of history and world and culture and adapt, mm-hmm. you know, which is very enticing.
Yeah, yeah, that's kind of the Alaskan story, isn't
yeah.
it? The freedom to
the freedom,
do what
yeah.
you want to do, right. Which I think brings us into the subject of some of the controversy around diversity, and I want to get into that. But I want to make sure I give out the phone numbers for people who want to join our conversation. The number here is 550-8433. 550-8433. Statewide, it's 888-353-5752. And email is hometown@alaskapublic.org. If you send me an email at that address, I will read it on the air. And you can find out more about our show on our website, alaskapublic.org. Just click on Anchorage Diversity, which is what we're talking about today on Hometown Alaska. My two guests are Indra Arriaga, who's a Mexican-American, a board member of Alaska Institute for Justice, an artist, Eddie Hunsinger, who's a demographer with the Alaska Department of Labor. So we just went through a major controversy when school board candidate Don Smith made remarks during his campaign that he felt that problems in the Anchorage School District were caused in part by an increase in diversity and the fact that there are too many non-English speaking children. I guess we have about 95 different languages spoken at home among the children in the Anchorage School District. A lot of English language learners in our district. And he was particularly concerned about the number of refugees who are coming through the federal government's program, where the local contractor is the Catholic Social Services. And Eddie, I thought I'd just start with you, if you can put some parameters around just how many first generation or you know, foreign born immigrants are there at Anchorage compared to other cities, and does that that group of refugees who are coming here is that a big percentage of the people coming, or how does that all fit together in terms of just numbers and the factual basis of it?
Well, if we compare it to other bigger cities than Anchorage, actually, if we compare to Seattle or Los Angeles, we have a smaller foreign-born population. Smaller share of our population is foreign-born than in those cities. Much smaller, actually. We're still less than 10%. Foreign-born, and most of our foreign-born population is actually a little bit over half is actually coming from another state.
So they're not coming from another country to Anchorage. That's a very small number that's doing that.
That's right. We're sort of a second step of migration. There are what they call gateway cities. So those are Los Angeles, New York. I might have mentioned those earlier. And still, Alaska may be, or Anchorage may be becoming more of a gateway. But still, it is the second stop, and we don't have as large a foreign-born as those big cities.
Mm-hmm. So this refugee program, is that a demographically significant number of people that's coming in? I've been told it's like under 120 or so a year.
Oh, right. I'm not familiar with the refugee statistics, actually. But we do have, as I mentioned earlier, over 20,000 people moving to Anchorage each year, and 20,000 people move out. It's more than 20,000. It may be that the folks who are coming here through refugee programs are more likely to stay, and so all of those folks who move here, most of those folks who move here stay, and that does add to the population. But there are much bigger numbers of people who are moving to and from the city and the state.
Mm-hmm. Indra, I know you wrote a column to respond to those remarks that mm-hmm. Don Smith made in his campaign. What was it that, you know, particularly bothered you about what he had to say?
Gosh, that's such a long list. Well, you know, this idea of viewing the world through a set of glasses that ignores the value of people as human beings, firstly, I think was the first thing that got to me. And, you know, he kept referring to people as imported, which to me is an economic term, you know, about things that you can buy, you can sell, and clearly people are not in that category. The other thing that bothered me was his perspective on, you know, blaming them for issues that growing communities and growing cities face when they don't have an economic base that is diverse enough to support a system. And so I think that it was a very simple answer to a condition where, you know, a lot of things come into play, like economics, like weather, like, you know, immigration is a small part of it, but also like within our own dynamics and education and healthcare and services. So that's what prompted my response, was, you know, just this idea that you're really looking at this and blaming a group of people for something that is systemic, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. And statewide and nationwide. Mm-hmm. So,
do you, Mr. Smith is very, very welcome to call 550-8433 if he's listening. But I mean, in terms of, can you identify or understand at all the point of view of someone who sort of grew up here, it was one way, and now it's different. And they sort of maybe, I don't know, I'm reading into some of those comments, but feeling a sense of loss of ownership or a sense of being put upon that you have to change when you don't want to.
I think there's an underlying element of fear that we all face as human beings. You know, I experience it too when change comes along. And it's being able to identify that fear and take responsibility for it that I think was particularly lacking in his case. You know, because we all want things as we remember them. Like, my memories of my childhood are very, very fond, which I'm sure, you know, for people around me who were making decisions and trying to make ends meet was probably not as rosy as I remember it. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I think that there's a little bit of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, and then Mayor Sullivan held a press conference and didn't particularly denounce the comments, but said Anchorage is open and welcoming for everyone. And he's certainly spoken about the positive aspects of diversity. And so there was a strong reaction. But then, as Mr. Smith pointed out in the newspaper, 42% of the people voted for him. So he said, well, maybe there are more people who feel that way. How do you feel in this community? Do you feel like you're welcome for what you are? Do you ever run into prejudice reactions against you? Do you feel it's as open in a community as others you've lived in? I mean, San Francisco, I guess, is pretty far out on the spectrum as far as being open.
It is, but it also creates a false sense of security when it comes to issues like race and gender and sexuality and, you know, economics. And, you know, being in Alaska, the complexities are on the surface. And is it more or less, you know, comfortable for me? It's on a situational basis. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, obviously the politics of it speak loudly, you know, in terms of how the general population, you know, is segmented, you know, intellectually and politically. But I also think that it's part of, you know, being human and, you know, being a person who believes in self-determination, you know, that you simply exist and that you have to resolve these differences. I was listening a few weeks ago, actually, to different commencement speeches and ran across President Kennedy's commencement speech to American University in 1963. And he talks about, you know, let us not ignore the differences, but let us focus on the common interest to resolve these differences and to subsequently resolve conflict. And that, you know, makes a path for diversity, you know, and diversity as a goal being something that is very positive.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We have an email here, and I think this is directed to you, Eddie. What role does the military play in local diversity? Do those people stay in Alaska? I think over time that has been a contributor, hasn't it?
Yes, that's certainly not just the military. Well, the military itself is very diverse, and we have a Jay Bear here, and up at Fort Wainwright, and Eielson, and down in Kodiak. There are places with higher diversity simply because of the military base, and also the jobs related to the military base. A lot of those service positions and places that jobs supporting the base are held by people of foreign and Hispanic and Asian and Pacific Islander, diverse backgrounds.
Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, back in the old days when we had much lower minority membership in Anchorage, you'd run into African Americans. Well, how did you get here? Well, I came in the military, and then I realized I liked it, and I stayed. Sometimes you'd hear people say, you know, less prejudice here than anywhere else I lived, so this is where I ended up after the military brought me here.
Right. I've heard that as well. I haven't sort of looked at the history of African Americans in Alaska closely enough, but I have heard that our military certainly had an effect. But it had an effect for, obviously, for the white population as well. You definitely hear about a lot of folks whose dad or granddad was in the military, and they just loved Alaska, and that's sort of one thing we all sort of share is that, like you mentioned earlier, that we all want to be here in Alaska for one reason or another.
Yeah, so you end up wherever you were brought to, and the same things that everybody cares about here are the outdoors and wildlife and the beauty and
right.
all those things work, and so the more mobile people are going to end up increasing a percentage. Really interesting sort of mathematical thing. Yeah. So we're going to take a break here, but after I come back, I'm going to be giving the phone numbers again, and I'd love to hear from some callers. Do you feel like Anchorage is free of prejudice, or have you experienced prejudice, and in what form has it taken? And we, you know, I originally had two more guests booked today, one from the Filipino community and one from the Hmong community. Unfortunately, they both had to cancel at the last minute. So I'd love to hear from members of some of the other communities in Anchorage about how you got here, why you like it here, what your community is all about. So listen, in about a minute, I'll be back. I'll give out those phone numbers, and then we will continue with Hometown Alaska.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska from Alaska Public Media. The program repeats tonight at 9 p.m. on KSKA Anchorage and will not be taking phone calls. You can find Hometown Alaska on iTunes or listen at alaskapublic.org.
It's Hometown Alaska. I'm Charles Wolforth, and our topic today is diversity in Anchorage. The amazing mix of people who live here, the different communities they are members of, and the prejudice or absence of prejudice that people experience here in our city. And I have two guests in the studio. Indra Arriaga is a member of the Mexican American community, a board member of Alaska Institute for Justice, and an artist who did an amazing sculpture in the Mountain View neighborhood called We've Come From So Far, and Eddie Hunsinger, who is a demographer with the Alaska Department of Labor. And we would love to hear from you as well, either because you are a member of an ethnic community or maybe you're not and you have questions. The number here is 550-8433, 550-8433. If you're calling from outside Anchorage, it's toll-free at 888-353-5752. And you can also email us at hometown@alaskapublic.org, hometown@alaskapublic.org. And we've gotten a few emails over the show, and those are fun to read aloud and get responses to. Let's talk about the sculpture that you created, Indra. It's in front of the McDonald's in Mountain View, and it's a figure of these four sort of terracotta colored figures that are kind of unidentifiable, and then they have some cuts and striations on them, and there's a loosely wrapped with a big, thick rope. What is the sort of the inspiration, or what were you trying to express with this piece?
Well, the title of the piece, as you mentioned, is We've Come From So Far. And how it came about was Christina, Barbara, and I were, you know, chatting one night, and the request for proposals came out. And we looked at where it was going to be going, which was Mountain View. And the first thing that came to mind was, well, it's an immigrant community, and I'm an immigrant, and she had been an immigrant in other places. And so it came from a discussion about what it means to be here. The sculpture itself, it's three, they weigh about 1.5 tons each, solid concrete, red, human abstraction forms, and they... The part of them that is not abstract is the rope that, you know, is in the bottom part of their bodies. And it's loosely represented. So it's, you know, the idea was that as we come to Alaska and as we come to Anchorage from wherever you're from, you know, from the bush or from a different neighborhood or from the lower 48 or a different country, you bring with you ties. And those ties... on the one hand, they bind you to where you're from, and on the other hand, they're loose enough that you can create new ties wherever you are. And so that's the significance of, you know, the rope in the sculpture. The sculpture, it's three shapes, and you can't really see where the front is or where the back is, you know. And we did that because you should be able to see it from all sides and find a relationship to any part of it. And that also made it so that it's not gender defined. and it's not defined by ethnicity. You can't look at it and say, oh, you know, that's a Hispanic person or that is a Black person, or, you know, it's just, it's a human person first.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And what was the response? It sounds like it was mixed, some positive, some not so positive.
It was very mixed. We were told when we got the award that there had been some discussion within the selection committee and it passed by a very narrow margin, because there were some concerns about, you know, what this sculpture would bring to people. And so that meant, you know, would people see it as bondage? Would people see it, you know, in the color red? Would that be off-putting? You know, what would people misunderstand it? Would people hate it? And so we had a wide range of responses, some of which were very, very negative, a lot of which, however, were very positive. You know, people who understood it, who got it, who liked it. There's actually been other people who have interacted with the sculpture, which I think is really nice. There was one woman whose name I don't know, who kept dressing them up and taking photos, you know, and redefining the sculpture, you know, for her own artistic expression. And mm-hmm. I think that's great. So, yeah.
Well, I mean, there's something sort of doubly metaphorical about everybody responding to it differently, since it's all about these different perspectives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think it's healthy. You know, it's healthy when art can elicit different responses and that the community that it's in actually feels comfortable enough to voice those responses.
Yeah, yeah, it's a good sign. Let's go to Laura, who's calling in with a comment or a question. Laura?
Hi, yeah, my name is Laura. I live in Mountain View, kind of by the area where you were just talking about. But I'm new to here. I moved here about a year ago, and I just have questions for the panelists on just kind of the levels of racism here. I feel like I moved here from New Mexico, and it just feels very different, almost like that kind of the privileged white community here sets in different levels of like preference within different communities here that I haven't seen in other places, where kind of the military or like folks of, you know, African-American or Black folks here have, you know, almost a higher level based on education than people who are moving here from other countries for the first time. And especially just a lot of racism I'm seeing having to do with the Native Alaskan community. So I was wondering if folks could touch on that for me.
So help me understand your question a little bit. You feel like in New Mexico it was a bit more equal?
That there was definitely racism, but that it wasn't so very much defined on where people were coming from. It was just overall, like, it was white and people of color, versus here I feel like it's very distinguished based on how recently you moved to the United States versus how recently you moved to Alaska and what your country of origin is versus color.
Interesting. You know, and that goes back a long way in Alaska, where sort of how long you've lived here is a big thing. And whenever anybody's speaking in public, they'll say, well, I've lived here for X number of years. And even back when they were starting the permanent fund, there was they attempted to set it up in such a way that you got more money for the longer that you had lived in Alaska, and you got every additional year, you'd get an additional percentage. How do you feel about that, Indra? How do you respond to the comment the caller made?
Well, I can, you know, having lived in other places, including Texas and California, I see what she's saying. And I think that, you know, part of what we may notice, it's not that it's not present in other places. It's just that here we're such a much smaller population that people can differentiate themselves, you know, by where they're from, by, you know, who their family is, how long they've been here. And so it's almost magnified, I think, mm-hmm. you know, but I don't think it's necessarily exclusive to Alaska.
Mm-hmm. Maybe a bit different.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, Laura.
Thanks.
All right. Let's go to Carl, who's calling about, I've got an enigmatic message here, climate refugees within Alaska. I'm not sure what you mean by that.
Well, yeah, we're already seeing that. I mean, the King Islanders were had to relocate 30 years ago. So climate change induced environmental changes are going to put villages underneath the sea, eroding riverbanks. And so we're going to start seeing an increase in internal refugees. And, you know, there's lots of mechanisms for protection of the human rights of refugees from other countries. So how is Anchorage and Alaska going to deal with refugees from whether it's climate induced or or emergencies and flooding and things like that, which is completely possible in the next 30 years. That's something that I just wanted to touch base on.
I think that's a really good point, Carl, and it's not only due to climate change, but also because of energy costs and other stressors in rural Alaska, that the population of rural communities are getting smaller and the population in Anchorage is getting larger. There was a little bit of a scare about it a few years ago that, oh, there's a flood of energy refugees coming to Anchorage from rural Alaska, and folks said, oh, well, it's overstated. But in fact, if you look at rural schools, the numbers in many, many communities are going down. And we happen to have a state demographer here to talk about it. What is happening with in terms of native migration?
Well, there is there are people who, just like a number of people who move to and from the state, is large, both coming to and going and leaving the state. People move to and from rural Alaska, to and from urban Alaska, and so each year there's this big turnover. And we, but the general the trend for the net number of people moving from rural Alaska to urban Alaska is that there are losses each year. For many of the northern and southwest communities, the majority native communities, these are offset by high birth rates. And so the populations for many of the Alaska Native villages are maintaining or actually climbing in some places. But there is a net migration into urban areas, and that's not simply an Alaska phenomenon, and it may have to do with particular events in some communities, but there is a worldwide, there is a net rural to urban migration.
Mm-hmm. Which is probably partly an economic factor, which we haven't touched on, but the Anchorage is where the jobs are.
Right. People, for one reason or another, people are making decisions that they prefer this set of amenities and this lifestyle to another. But again, many people are moving also from urban to rural Alaska. There's just a big turnover.
Hmm. Indra?
Yeah. I also want to mention, the migration is not just to Anchorage. I mean, when villages find themselves in dire situations, they look for other ways, you know, or other places to shift. Newtok, for example, you know, the village is being relocated. You know, Shishmaref, you know, is considering similar options. And so you've got, I believe there's something like 32 villages that are in the federal list of, you know, villages that could be potentially in danger, you know, due to climate change. And that's huge. And, you know, so I think that part of the movement can be attributed to those negative impacts of the climate, but ultimately, I think human nature is to go where there's opportunity.
Yeah. And we have I should mention that Indra is a multi-directional threat here, because she's not only a Mexican-American, but she's also a planner who's worked in rural Alaska. Carl, what do you think?
Yeah, I think it's important to evaluate, to make sure that some of the same services offered to refugees are also offered to folks within Alaska that don't have the same economic opportunities that were discussed earlier from an outside, but it's also in rural Alaska, but there's not the same economic opportunities as well. So there's a concern about the services in urban places, but particularly as we might see, it also will take one storm for some of these villages to go under, as we've already seen a few storms on the coastal villages, causing people to move already. So I just wanted to make sure that discussion moves into a level of, you know, protecting the human rights of those moving within this state.
That's a really good point, Carl. I'm glad you raised it, and I wouldn't have thought of it. So that was a good call for us to receive. And I want to get into services for minority communities and ethnic communities, an important topic. We have a few more callers I want to get to first and let people know this is Hometown Alaska. I'm Charles Woolforth. We're talking today about Anchorage's diversity with Indra Arriaga, who's a member of the Mexican-American community, and there's too many other credits even to mention, and Eddie Hunsinger, who's a demographer with the Alaska Department of Labor. And now let's go to Chuck, who's calling about a different kind of diversity. Chuck?
Yeah, actually, before I get into that, I was just talking, your previous discussion reminded me, I was just talking with friends recently about my first experience in college. I grew up around Glen Ellen in the interior, and we had quite a variety of religious and ethnic, quite a few natives and a couple of black people lived up in the valley in those days. And I grew up around them and didn't think anything of it. When I started college, the first year in college, I was required to stay in the dorm, and the dorm policy for freshmen was that you didn't get to pick in your roommate. So I was on this floor with an interesting bunch of guys from mostly Illinois. And later on, I had some other friends that said, gee, what's it like to be around all those Jews? And it's like, I didn't know they were Jews. And besides, their friends, I mean, they were just people to me. Growing up in Alaska maybe gave me a slightly naive view of the world, but I think it was a good one.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, Chuck.
I got talking about how great it was to be raised in that environment. And then I had friends remind me that Alaska is not a very friendly place when it comes to gay or lesbian citizens. In fact, we were the first in line to pass a constitutional amendment kind of enshrining discrimination. So, you know, we've got our hits and we've got our misses.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. And I think we're going to turn your mic down because there's a lot of noise on that line. Two good points. One is that kids who are growing up now in our super diverse schools are learning to live with diversity, and I know my own kids have been through that. But at the same time, we've got a community that's repeatedly turned down laws that would create equal rights for gays, lesbians, transgender, and bisexuals. And we have a constitutional amendment that blocks marriage. I wonder if there's a contradiction there. What do you think, Indra? I mean, do you think that's a contradictory message, that we're open, we accept everybody, and yet we can't seem to pass those laws that are passed everywhere else?
Contradictory, I don't know if that's the correct term, but I think that, you know, oftentimes people will try to be politically correct in how they speak and how they express themselves, but what you do in the voting booth is completely different. And so I think we see a little bit of that. I mean, that goes back to Don Smith's 42%, right? And his previous attempt and successful attempt to get the Martin Luther King, was it the street of the convention center?
It was the Performing Arts Center,
right, renamed.
It had been named for Martin Luther King, and then there's an initiative to take that name away, which was successful. Yeah,
so I think it's unfortunate, but I am very hopeful, because I think that a lot of these kids that are growing up in, you know, diverse schools with different kinds of friends are, you know, creating a new status quo, which is more open. And, you know, honestly, these kids can't vote yet.
Mm-hmm. You know, I brought this topic up with a leader of Bridge Builders, who I tried to get on the show, but it was unsuccessful. But, you know, and asked, you know, have you, Bridge Builders, dealt with the diversity of gays and lesbians and bisexual? And the response is, well, a lot of the ethnic communities are extremely conservative on those subjects. And it's not really... and I wonder if you feel the same way. I mean, in terms of the Latino community, if that's really a topic that they want to take on.
Well, it's interesting. You know, we are a conservative community when it comes to, you know, acknowledging equal rights. However, I can tell you that on a personal level, families will act in the best interest of the people that they love. Mm-hmm. You know, and for example, my mother, who is, you know, a very devout Catholic woman in her 70s who doesn't speak English, you know, has been undergoing a transformation, you know, in having me as a daughter, because she understands what the church is telling her. She understands what society tells her. But at some level, she has to question why it is the way it is. And at the end of the day, she's more interested in me being happy, mm-hmm. you know, than in her pastor being happy or her priest being happy. Yeah. So I think that, you know, within minority communities, or at least my community, you know, there is a conflict the community has to resolve. And I think that that's going to take a little bit of time.
It is interesting. And I think that's true across the community, is that there's people feel differently when it's a political question as to when it's a personal question.
Yeah.
And at some point, hopefully we can merge those two. Let's go to Caroline. Caroline, did you have a comment?
Yes. First of all, I was privileged to spend 4 years in American Samoa from 65 to 67, and then 1 year in Fairbanks then back in 68 to 70, and then back to Fairbanks. So I would say, as far as the issue that was just brought up, the Samoan people did not have any discrimination against gays, and they weren't called the males were called fafafine, and the females were called fafatama, which meant in the way of a woman and in the way of a man. And I think it was when they came in contact with the Christian faith, different categories. But the main thing, and Charles, you and I mentioned this one time or another context, and that was one of the reasons I loved Fairbanks when I got there. I grew up in the racist South. In fact, I was not happy with my hometown and left the day after I graduated high school, going to a job and accommodations. But I think people who are here, who grew up here, if they're happy with the town, they don't have a curiosity about other people, which I have always had. And if you have just a sense of curiosity, you'll look for the differences between what you know and who you are and what other people are. But anyway, the thing I loved about Fairbanks is at minus 40, minus 50, that cuts through all the isms. This was before remote phones, you know, no smartphones back in 67, 68. And if you were a mile out of town and your car broke down, you could freeze to death. So somebody came by to help. It was just thank you, thank you, thank you. That was a big piece of it. And also, Samoans are from a trust territory, so there's not a lot of the difficulties getting to Alaska or anywhere in the U.S. that other groups would face. But anyway, no, welcome them all. We should learn what we can. And one reason that we're all here in Alaska, I just saw as I was waiting because I'm outside killing dandelions, and that was a bald eagle flying up about, I don't know, 600 or more feet. And that site said to me, well, that's why we're all here.
That's right. Well, and we're making a great sacrifice by being in this basement radio studio on such a beautiful day. Oh. So thanks for reminding us, Caroline. Always great to hear from you.
You're welcome to come help me kill dandelions.
All right. I've got some of my own to take care of. We haven't talked too much about the support that minority communities receive in Anchorage. And there are organizations, but there's not really... I'm not sure how much support there is for new immigrants to find their way in town. I know you're. Is that something the Alaska Institute for Justice is involved in, or what's your sense of that, Indra? Are we behind other communities in providing that kind of support?
Well, I think that, you know, we do have a long way to go. You know, the Alaska Institute for Justice is basically a three-prong organization, with the first one being litigation and advocacy, not for undocumented people. There's this perception that, you know, oh, you know, we're making everybody legal. But actually, you know, we're providing services to people who are already here legally and need support. And the second one is the Language Translation Center. And that is key, because for diversity to be sustained and for people to get the services that they need, the language is huge. You know, so on the one hand, we've got 95 languages spoken at home, and that's something to be really proud of. And on the other hand, how does those 95 languages get served outside of the home? And a lot of agencies in Alaska have a mandate to provide language access, but in reality or not, whether it's a budgetary constraint or, you know, a lack of focus or whatever it is, it's not being met. You know, the third prong has to do with climate change migration, and just looking at it, researching it, and trying to provide services for, you know, people within the state.
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting, when you look at our local and state government, you don't see this diversity. You see pretty much white.
Yeah.
A few natives, but mostly just white. I don't know why that has happened, if it's because the minority community is too new and so hasn't gotten into the political realm, but it does seem like that's something that hasn't happened, and maybe when it does, some of these supports you're talking about will follow.
Right.
So, Eddie Hunziker from the Department of Labor, do the statistics in any way look at undocumented immigration and how many
undocumented immigrants might be in Anchorage. Is that something that's possible to quantify?
We don't have undocumented statistics. It's difficult to count undocumented. They used to, and they still do this, they will compare what they think the population would be giving sort of recorded people who moved to this to the country and births and deaths, and they'll compare that to a census count, and they'll try to get a sense of what the undocumented population was. And I think for the last few years, it's been around 10 million nationwide. But for Alaska, we have such a small share of that. They report for some states, but not for Alaska. And Census Bureau data products, which provide a lot of our questions about characteristics of the population, don't have – they have foreign-born and they have citizenship status, but they don't have non-documented indicator.
And with so many people flowing in and out all the time, just doing that subtraction exercise you talked about would be pretty difficult. Yeah.
Right.
Probably not so many, though, because it would not be that easy to get here unless you came on a visa and then just overstayed or something like that.
I couldn't say for sure, but it would be just very hard to estimate because of our huge turnover each year and our relatively small population.
Yeah. And what are the groups that are growing the fastest among all the groups? Are there some that are growing faster as a percentage rate than others?
The Hispanic population is growing particularly fast, and Asian and Pacific Islander, but both of those groups are growing particularly fast. And they and actually there's been for the Asian and Hispanic origin, or, and for all three of those groups, there's a lot of multi-race for the young folks. And so the younger population, if you add multi-race, it increases that population dramatically. And also note a large share of the, and I've sort of alluded to this earlier, a large share of the of these groups are under 18, so they're not into their career years yet. Mm-hmm. And so we'll see more changes in the future, not just due to the total population, but to the makeup of our workforce and the community of adults in Alaska as well.
Well, it's interesting when you say multi-race. I guess the people are meeting each other, getting married, having children, and we're becoming more of a mixed community even within our families, and then people have to decide which ethnicity they are.
Absolutely.
Is it possible from what you're looking at, the trend lines, to predict where we're going? Is it just, do we just become more and more diverse? I mean, it seems like, have you done that kind of exercise?
Right. Well, there's a few things that we know for sure.
It'll have to be very quick, unfortunately.
Right. We know Alaska's going to be older, Alaska's going to be more urban, and Alaska's going to be more diverse. We don't have specific projections for the race and ethnic groups of Alaska, but we do know that Alaska is becoming steadily more diverse with each decade.
All right. Thank you. I really enjoyed this conversation. That was Eddie Hunsinger from the Alaska Department of Labor. He's a demographer there. We also heard from Indra Arriaga, who's a member of the Mexican American community, a board member of Alaska Institute for Justice, an artist, a planner, many other things, and was very kind to come in today on short notice. That's all for Hometown Alaska. Next week, I'll be back talking about planning and the future of the Anchorage Museum. Pat Yak is the Chief Content Officer for Alaska Public Media. Monica Goki is our web editor and audio engineer. Thanks for joining us today on Hometown Alaska. I'm Charles Wolforth.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Learn more about Hometown Alaska and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.